It's the Sod Pod, brought to you by Grassland Agro. The Sod Pod. Hello, hello, and welcome to the Sod Pod. Today is episode 2, and our last episode we covered the Grassland Agro Soil Sustainability Programme. If you haven't heard it, I'd advise you go back an episode and have a listen. Some really good topics covered on that. And today we're going to have a big conversation about fertilizer calibration. Bit of a minefield, a lot more technical than we thought. John, talk to me.
Yeah, fertilizer spreader calibration is it's a big topic, and it's a very topical one this year with the price of fertilizer. But really and truly, every year it's equally important because of the environmental challenges and the accurate placing of fertilizer. And that's effectively what we're trying to achieve when we get fertilizer, put it in our spinner. We're trying to accurately place it across every square foot or meter of the field. That's the ultimate goal. And there's a lot of things that influence that. From a general point of view, I would say that dairy farmers maybe are not hectic, or beef farmers, livestock farmers generally, or grassland farmers, we can be a little bit, we don't see the differences as easily. So to see to see striping in a field or a fertilizer issue, you need a 25% difference from the coefficient of variance, which is basically just a standard deviation. I suppose basically what you're just looking about is across the working width or the bout width of the machine, how the application rate will vary in simple terms. On balance, maybe dairy farmers don't have a massive reputation for being good at machinery, and they're nearly encouraged to be bad at machinery. That sometimes, you know, if you spend money on machinery and as a dairy farmer under certain models, that it's a waste of money. But in relation to the fertilizer spreader, it has to be fit for purpose and accurately calibrated, or else you're best off maybe getting a contractor in. But we'll probably tease out going down through it exactly the points that we need to look at. But Dave, you told me a right good one there, that you have a 7-acre field at home in Liskeland, and you measured it, and what did it come in at?
Yeah, John, 6.5 acres. So like there's a variation there of 0.5 acre, and that's a variation then on fertilizer that's been spread. Like I'm going out spreading that 7-acre field, which I always thought was 7 acres, but there's opportunity to cut back on 0.5 acre there, and that's over a grazing season or a grass growing season, you know. So but even what you go back to there, John, and water quality, and that's, these are having a massive impact on it. And we talk about derogation and these problems, like derogation is benchmarked off water quality. And if we don't meet that target, we're going to be under savage pressure. So something as basic as getting field size right with exactly the right rate is going to be crucial.
David, just on that, where would you be losing that 0.5 acre? Like, what was it that's costing you when it comes to actually spreading that fert? When you talk about 7-acre field and it comes in at 6.5, where are you losing that 0.5?
Yeah, sure, James. I suppose what generations thought the field was like, you know, it's just what was said. It was always known as a 7-acre field, so that was just taken, you know. Look, sure, there could be corners taken out of it or a bit of reclaiming and all this crack, you know, or maybe field boundaries are grown in and that, you know, James. But this is the massive one, you know, and even going back to John's point there on the fertilizer spreader and a lot of problems. I suppose what's seen on farm, if you can't see it, there is no problem, you know. But like there's always going to be variation or a bit of inaccuracy with the fertilizer spreader. You're going to have to take that, but it's just trying to reduce that as much as you can. What do you think, Shawnee?
Yeah, no, it's a very good point. Like, I suppose you take that 0.5 acre over 7 acre, say it was that's a 10% straight away inaccuracy. And then if you take something as simple as your forward speed, if you are supposed to be going at 10 kilometers per hour, say, and you were going 1 kilometer either side of it, 9 or 11, that's another 10%. So that's, you're at 20% straight away. And that's not even focus on, say, damaged veins or worn vein settings or anything got to do really with the fertilizer spreader. Look, as you said earlier, John, it takes 25% in accuracy to see a yellow stripe or something like that in a field. Mm. So, like, you know, a few simple things like that before even we get to the fertilizer spreader, and you could potentially be at your 25%. So if a farmer is seeing stripes in a field, there could be 25 to 50% inaccuracy. Like,
definitely. Like, and even Sean, like, I suppose one of the guys that works with us, Simon Delaney, his father, I'm sure he's related to you, Jim, now.
That's right.
But his father, Richie, would be really good on machinery, and like he would have worked out the forward speed for his tractor based on the manufacturer recommendations and, you know, the gears and the revs that he's going to be spreading that. But the thing about that is that even though he's gone to all that detail and it really ties into your forward speed, is that that's under certain conditions. But when you're actually in the field, there can be a wheel slip, and it's based on a full set of tyres, you know. And that's very important, so that the tread in the tyres starts to wear down. You might necessarily be carrying it at the same forward speed, and a small difference can make a huge thing. So two practical ones straight away are knowing the size of your field and knowing how fast you're going before you even look at the spinner. And to do that, obviously, you can look at GPS, and we'll come on to that again in a bit more detail. But even setting up a distance of 100 metres, a fixed distance, and working out the amount of time it takes you to get or to travel that, and you can work out your forward speed then as well. Like, so, like getting those things right and having the tractor fairly right straight away. Or
well, that's it. And even talking about tractors and that, like, I don't know, some farmers are going to know like piece of machinery now. They're exceptional now. Like they've been through a lot.
I think you got scarred one day whenever you went to a farm.
I did, Johnny, yeah, but like we talk about forward speed and we talk about revs and John Elroy revs and whatnot, but like it's hard to measure forward speed and revs if the dial or the clock is not working, like, you know. So look, it's very cheap to get a contractor in and spread fertilizer, and I think it'll be a major one this year with the price of it and trying to get accuracy right. But even what you're saying there, Shawnee, I won't say where the farm was or who the farmer was, but a fertilizer spreader on a pallet which was on a bale handler and tied in with twine that was probably older than the fertilizer spreader itself, and the PTO shaft going through the bale handler. So it was some piece of engineering. But looks, that's what you're dealing with. And to be honest, that could have been spreading better than some fertilisers that aren't mounted onto a tractor, right? And mounting a fertiliser spreader, even, Shawnee, is a big one.
I suppose this year, but you could argue that this happens every year, farmers might be spreading, say, can every year, and this year they're changing to urea, say. Like, there's a massive difference in the bulk densities of the different fertilisers. Like, if you take can at a bulk density of 1.05 and then urea at 0.75, like, we have a video just launched there on Ian Connaughton talking about the bulk densities and how important it is to look up each individual product and make sure, because that the bulk densities, because there's such a difference between products, there can be a massive variation, and that can lead to inaccuracies when spreading, John.
Yeah, so Ina is obviously the bulk density expert and the male grooming expert. And
I'd advise anyone to look into the video, and we might put up a poll there, see who's the better hair, John O'Loughlin or Ian Connaughton.
There's no contest. Ian, if you put the amount of work that Ian puts into his hair, you'd want to have the better said. No, in fairness to Ina, he did a great job on that. And it's really highlighting the bulk density and the influence that has in relation to the spreadability of the fertilizer. And that's a massive thing, like, because what you have to think about, with a lower bulk density, you have a lower weight. And this is another one that often confuses people, because when we talk about urea in bags per acre, right, bear with me for a second, people think of the big bag and it's 375 kilos. But in a small bag, we're talking about a 50 kilo bag. Everything is 50 kilo bags. Right, but sometimes it causes a little bit of confusion, because the big bags are the 375. And the reason that they're the 375 is because the product is lighter relative to the amount of volume it takes up, so that there's only so much you can fit onto a bag to get onto a pallet. And the way to think about it in relation to how it'll move off the disc of the spinner is that if you were outside and you were trying to puck or to throw a table tennis ball and a golf ball, that you could throw the golf ball an awful lot further because it won't get caught in the wind, as opposed to the table tennis ball. Sometimes you'd see it when you were a young lad, if you had a golf ball and you hit it with a hurley, like you drive it from here in New Ross out to nearly Kilkenny, like across the river, like you can get a serious strike.
Just so as you're aware, John, across the river from here is still actually County Wexford, Ross Bourke. So you just need to get over that another bit there.
Oh, well, yeah. I was factoring that in as well, Jim.
Man, John.
Cool Cullen strike I have. Like. I'd probably put it to Waterford even. But that's how it influences how it will actually strike the disc, spin off, And that's a big thing, because there's new products going to be used this year that farmers haven't looked at because of the availability and supply. And even some farmers mightn't realise that they will actually have to change their spinner from protected urea versus can. You know, they think that a half a bag is a half a bag. Mm-hmm. But that's a big challenge, and that takes a bit of education. And what you have to do is probably refer to the manufacturer's guidebook or app. You know, and they are those tools for the bigger manufacturers, your Amazon, Bogbell, Rauch, obviously.
The spreading veins is another big one. Like John Corbett in the video that we released had a really good example of what worn veins look like and the ripples that can be on it. And he gave a really good example on the granules going on flat concrete versus your grooved concrete. And the grooved concrete was, say, the representing, say, the damaged or the ripples in the veins. So if your granules is going across the nice flat concrete, it's going to go further and the grooves is going to slow it up. So I thought it was really good. Visually, just getting that image into your head, I thought it was really good.
Look, that video is up on YouTube there now, Grassland Agro's YouTube channel. And it's worth noting, it not just for Ian Connington's hair, he does a very good job on how to do your own bulk density test. And then, of course, John Corbett, who is a calibration expert, as far as we could see on the day. And John does a savage job walking through that process, which is so complex, but it was really insightful there. And it's definitely worth a look.
John put in the Corbett's and Mallow sticker on the and positioned himself in a great position. But John is from Corbett's and Mallow. He's part of the family business there as well as working with Grassland Agro, and an absolute wizard in relation to fertilizer spreader setup and calibration. Listen, I think like it's great asset to have for us, and we certainly learned a lot from him. And one of the anecdotal things that he pointed out to us, Jim, was that if you look in any publication, agricultural publication, and look at a picture of a fertilizer spinner, 9 times out of 10 it's going to be crooked. Dave, that's something that you would see though driving around the roads as well, whether it's going into a merchant or a co-op. And even, you know, during the summer there'll be lads coming in getting bulk fertilizer or getting loaded up. Like you see an awful lot of them are very poorly set up.
Yeah, definitely, John. And look, it could be something simple like even when a farmer is drawing in bales or something, they could be just adjusting the links or something, a small bit, and that's having a massive impact on how it's sitting on the tractor. And the other one is if it's on a hydraulic ram there, on the 3-point linkage, just having that straight so it's not facing down into the ground or tilted forward, because I suppose you're going to have poor spreadability then as well. So
it's going to cause you that striping again, because on one side it's going too high and on the other side you're hitting the ground too soon. Like.
Yeah, definitely. And even with the tilting back and forward as well, like you're not getting that spreadability, so you could be spreading into the ground. Like, and look, it's having a major impact on, look, we talked about water quality, even grass growth, like, because I suppose if you're spreading too much on one side compared to the other, like you actually can't, I suppose the plant can't physically take up that much nitrogen. You could be talking, in severe cases, maybe double the application of nitrogen on one side, and you just have losses then as a result. So, but yeah, look, putting it or just mounting the fertilizer spreader on the tractor is a massive one.
The application rates, this is something very important. The spreader guidebook is that most of them are actually done in kilos per hectare, and we work predominantly in bags per acre. So you need to know your units conversions. And that's very simple. And know the product that you're spreading, and knowing the percentage of nitrogen in that as well.
To go from kilos per hectare to units per acre is just multiply by 0.8.
Yeah.
I suppose you mentioned there, John, about what products or different products that farmers might be going with at the minute, like we're in the first quarter of the year. David, like, I suppose, what products are farmers going with now, say, or what is the advice, say, if you're index one for P or K, what would be a good product to go with? And then if you're maybe at the optimum index 3 or index 4, what would you be going with?
Yeah, Shawnee, I suppose a lot of slurry gone out there over the last few weeks, and I suppose ideally, and it's not always ideal in a farmland situation, but I suppose going on your low indices, which are slurry, and I suppose the rest of the ground in, going with the likes of a urea product, protected urea, I suppose, ideally. But look, nothing wrong with going with urea this time of year. You're going to have minimal losses there. But yeah, look, I suppose that's the idea. There's a good bit of work done there by Mike Egan there in Chagask and Moore Park, just on early nitrogen applications over the last 2 years. So there is merit definitely in putting out early nitrogen, and you will see that, I suppose, later response in March. But look, on those low P soils even, and I suppose accounting for slurry in that as well, but making sure that you are getting phosphorus in there early in the year, and trying to build your fertility early in the year more so than later in the year. I suppose you'll get a better response there on the soil fertility. But yeah, look, that's a major one. Whatever product it's going to be with phosphorus in it, but look, slurry is going to be, I suppose, a key one there this year.
Yeah, so within our range, it'd be really Tophos or P27, depending on your pH, Sean.
You know, what do you mean depending on your pH? Like, what's in the two products? Like, what's the difference? Yeah.
So the two products are protected forms of phosphorus. It's a very difficult nutrient to build. I noticed from my the little bit of help I gave Dave with his PhD. You know, this is a bone of contention that's been going on for a long time. But
did he thank you at the end of it, John? Did he?
I actually haven't seen the acknowledgements. That's about the only bit I didn't write. But
you're right, you're not in it.
It's about the only interesting part of any thesis I ever found. Anyways, go straight in and see, you know, if there's any crack. My own one's middling enough now.
But the Tophos and the P27.
Yeah, sorry, to get back onto points. Yeah, so phosphorus can get fixed very easy in the soil is the first thing.
Yeah.
So phosphorus gets fixed by either aluminium in Ireland or calcium, depending on your pH. So when your pH is over 7, there'll be a lot of fixation by calcium. And when your pH is under 6.3, there's a lot of fixation by aluminium and iron. To make it very simple, the reason for that is that 18, 6, 12 or 10, 10, 20, the P has a negative charge. And then it binds to aluminium, which is plus, and iron, which is plus, and the calcium, which is plus at the under end of the pH scale. So we have two options. We have a soft ground rock phosphate. And the soft ground rock phosphate is basically the precursor to this material. So it's actually, you can use an organic farm, and Sean. But we combine it with a root stimulant as well in our own formulation, but it has a lot of calcium. And basically what we're trying to do is use the acidity of the soil to break that bond between the calcium and the phosphorus. And it acts as a phase release of phosphorus then in that instance. But I suppose using it there in that instance is very good, but Tophos can be used at any pH. So Tophos is protected by, we have the phosphorus and we refine it and treat it with a humic acid so that it has a neutral charge. So it can't actually be fixed in the soil. So anything that we spread is either going to grow as more early grass or going to work to build our indexes. And it's also more available at lower soil temperatures as well. So depending on maybe if you had a very low pH, you could go with the P27 or the Physalg 27 as we describe it. And if you had a relatively good pH or a mix of pHs, I'd be going with the Tophos, because as Dave said, there's an awful lot of slurry gone out already. And slurry is perfectly balanced for silage ground, but not for grazing ground. And one of the limitations of slurry on grazing ground that hasn't been talked about, I would say, all year in relation to using slurry to displace the early nitrogen is the amount of potash in it. And the reason that that's important, Sean, is that potash is very antagonistic for grass tetany. So we talk about our phosphorus, our soil fertility program, we want to put our phosphorus in spring, and we want to put our potash in the back end. Whereas because we're using slurry earlier on grazing ground, we've gone out with maybe a 2,000 gallons of slurry is 60 units K. That's a really high amount of K. There's a lot of grazing going on. It's just something to be aware of, to supplement with the likes of the mag block or mag in the feed or whatever, or on the silage, that you get that in there. And especially the fixed end technology is going to help early on when the grass is very high in protein.
Just on the Calci Mag Plus, it's our high performance mineral block. It's actually suitable for dairy cows, sucklers, heifers, goats, sheep and horses. It has a high inclusion rate of magnesium. This is many functions, including nerve and muscle function, immune function and bone health. It also contains the unique ingredients calcigritin biotech, which condition the rumen and maximise mineral intake. And as John mentioned, the fix N, which limits the presence of excess ammonia in the rumen and therefore the blood and liver. Carry on, John.
Using a straight phosphorus with the urea, as Dave said, the urea-based product, that's going to be the best way. You have great control over targeting your phosphorus index as well. So if you have bad phosphorus levels on your farm, some of it's going to be index 2, some of it's going to be index 1. We should not treat the two of those the same. There's different requirements.
But even on that, John, like you talk about poor, like low P fertility, like even on index 2s and 3s, like there is low availability as well early on in the year. So with low soil temperatures, it is questionable how much of that phosphorus is plant available. So I suppose more so on the low P fertility soils, it's very important getting P available to the plant. And that's not what conventional phosphorus products are doing, or products with like DAP and that. You know, there's a lot of phosphorus been fixed. And the key is to try and get that available to the plant. And that's what the likes of P27 and TopFoss are doing. It's ensuring plant available sources that will stay there and ensure that they're available. Because I suppose more so in the springtime, but also throughout the year, availability of phosphorus is key for plant growth, but also for animal nutrition, animal health.
I'm right in saying, David, that out of all the phosphorus, say, that's in the soil, there's actually only a very, very small percentage of it that's available to the plant. It's like something like 1% or something like that.
Yeah, only about 1%, Sean. Yeah, it's very small, very small. And it's back to what John said there. A lot of phosphorus has been fixed. So there are massive pools of phosphorus, even back to organic matter. That is another source of phosphorus, but a lot of phosphorus has been fixed as well. But in the grand scheme of things, only about 1%.
Right, there's phosphorus being fixed, there's some have been taken up. How does the roots take up phosphorus, or is there some sort of a process there? I know you would be sort of, that's what you've covered in your PhD.
In simple terms, phosphorus has to be around the roots. And if it's not, I suppose, within 1 millimetre of the root, it can't be taken up. So essentially, if there's no phosphorus in the soil available to the plant, there's not going to be any roots there. So it's having a massive impact on the abundance of roots in the soil. So
phosphorus, it takes a very long time for it to work its way down through the soil. I'm right in saying that. It's not like sulfur or nitrogen that can make its way through the soil fairly quickly. Like phosphorus takes a long time for it. It's a bit like John going into a bar there and seeing a pint of Bulmers with no ice there to buy. It take a while for him to get him away from
it. Takes
the bar.
Him a while to approach the counter to buy it.
It takes a long time for James. We actually had lunch earlier and he forgot his wallet. But anyways, that's another story. But I think the two topics really tie into each other, because Dave, it's all linked to water quality and fertilizer spreader calibration. And the thing about phosphorus is that a very small bit of phosphorus can do an awful lot of damage. And really and truly, as Sean said there, that it's a very immobile nutrient. So it doesn't move that quickly. It doesn't leach if we can get it into the ground in safe conditions. But the problem is that when you look at your fertilizer spreader setup and the working width of the spreader, is that if you're spreading 21 metres, that the furthest granule is travelling 42 from the centre of the tractor. Because fertilizer spreaders work on the premise of double over that. Mm-hmm. So by having this wrong or inaccurate, you can do an awful lot of damage. But we're relatively safe in the fact that if we get the phosphorus product out in the right conditions, at the right rate, in the right time, in the right place, and get it into the ground, then it's going to be relatively stable. But the challenge there, I'm sure Dave will cover it in much more detail, is going forward, which we're all looking forward to, is the phosphorus fixation and phosphorus dynamics and stuff like that. But the two are very much linked. Small bit of phosphorus can do an awful lot of damage. Make sure your spinner is set up right.
That's savage, lads. I suppose my big takeaways here: accurate field size, accurate speed, level spreader, referring to the user manual, of course. Make sure you know the bulk density and do the test if you're unsure. Phosphorus, how it's taken up, diffusion, factors affecting the uptake. And a big one there for me was less than 1% of P in soil is available immediately for uptake. That's just frightening. Thank you for tuning in. Mind yourself out there. Farm smart, farm safe. Hey, thanks for listening to the Sod Pod. We hope you enjoyed it. To find out more, head over to www.grasslandagro.ie or check out our social channels, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, and YouTube. That's all for this episode. See you next time.